Welcome to Just to Know You, the podcast that interviews regular people at SAES and finds out they are far from regular.
That's right. I'm your host, Darian Batten.
And I'm Angela Kerskadden.
Let's get started.
Well, thank you all for joining us. Welcome to Just to Know You, where that's all we do is get to know you. I have with us a special guest, Mr. Jeffrey Cornell. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to join you, Darian.
All right. And Mr. Cornell, we were just talking about, you know, there have been some times where we met at a coach's meeting and stuff, but I did some snooping and I found your resume. And it's interesting because you are a two-time Aramcon. It looks like you were with Saudi Aramco for a significant period of time, starting in 1992 and ending in 2006. And then you went back to Florida and then returned to Saudi Aramco in 2010. How was your journey getting to Saudi Arabia?
If you want to go back even further, then we got to go back to my childhood. So I was born in Northwest Washington State in the city of Bellingham, Washington. Okay. And so when I was 10 years old, my dad and mom decided it was time for some adventure. And so my three sisters and I and my folks, we traveled here to Saudi Arabia in 1974. So I arrived and became a student at the Najma School in Ras Tanura as a fifth grader. And so that's when my life in Aramco started. And in just a matter of a few weeks, it's going to be ending as I retire. And that will be 50 years that I've been happily associated with life here in Saudi Arabia, off and on, you know, give or take a few years off for high school, college, a little professional break, 4-year break in between my employment here with Aramco. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So from 10 years old, back what year was that?
74. For many of your listeners were even, you know, on this earth. Yeah, it was quite an adventure. So back in those days, no internet. Communication, of course, would have been via either a very crackly sounding phone or by cable. And in fact, my dad received his job offer via cable. And so that's how you would communicate. And the Aramco offices in the States had just relocated the summer we were leaving from New York down to Houston. And so we did not go to any kind of orientation or anything because the Aramco services company was relocating to Houston at that time.
When you say by cable, what do you mean?
Well, think of it like a telegram, and it would have been basically in those days, that was how people communicated.
This is before fax and everything. This is
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So by telegram, you became an Aramcon. That is amazing to me. How was it growing up in Ras Tanura in the 70s?
It was a dream come true for a kid like me, because in those days, if you've been to Ras Tanura, it's a fantastic community, beach town. It has always had that beach vibe, and just things kind of slow down. Everybody seems generally in a good mood. You can always count on the beach across the street. And so consider Ras Tanura being about half that size when we showed up. And the center of our life was the school, the Najma School, which is now currently the junior high. That was everything. That was the kindergarten through ninth grade school. And then the surf house across the street and the swimming pool and the theater. That was the center of town for us growing up there in Ras Tanura. For us kids, it was just, and our parents basically said, you know, don't leave camp. And we didn't. And we found ways to explore and enjoy that community from the beach to the golf course to everything in between. It was just a wonderful place to grow up.
And so the community probably, I'm assuming, was more insular because there wasn't the large cities of Khobar, Jebel, Dahran, Dammam. It was probably a lot less people around in those areas.
Yes, there were a lot fewer people. So if you traveled to Dahran in those days, you were on, you know, a highway. It was just one-way highway, you know, going in each direction. Instead of the highway that we know today, you travel through Safwa and Katif and then eventually get to Dahran. And the buses were not air conditioned. Oof. Khobar was quite separated from Dahran. I mean, you know, now Dahran and Dammam and Khobar have all kind of merged into one megalopolis.
Right. Yeah.
And they were separate communities at that time. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of space in between.
At this point in time, for our listeners who don't understand or who don't know, Khobar and Dammam and Dahran are hard to even separate on a map. You can be driving and you don't know when you've entered one and exited another. You know, sometimes when we don't have all the amenities, that's when we become closest because we suffer somewhat together. And I'm just talking about like heat, you know, like it's right. It's hot and, you know,
it is hot. Yes.
And there's no AC. Yeah. And I don't feel as bad if I look across the seat and somebody else is sweating with me. You know, it makes it more bearable. So that is so awesome. So fifth grade on up to
middle school. Ninth grade. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to pull something off the wall here. I'm going to pull a diploma. This is my ninth grade graduation diploma. Really? From Rostanura. So I don't have my master's degree. I don't have my bachelor's degree hanging up on the wall. I've got my graduation from ninth grade diploma that I have so proudly displayed in my classroom all these years, especially here, because this qualifies me officially as an Aramco brat, and that's what I call all my students. And I mean it with the greatest of intentions, and they get it after a while. It's like, we're all Aramco brats and we're in a proud club. If you've been raised here and you've been to the schools here, you are now officially in the club known as the Aramco Brat Club.
I think that's so important because you don't have that sense of belonging as deep as for other people who have remained in their countries. So ninth grade, mm-hmm. All right, we're going. And did you go to boarding school or ASD? Or
I did. I went to boarding school. So back in the day, there really wasn't an alternative choice here. Even the high school here, it existed, but it wasn't what I would consider to be a good option for students. It was just kind of getting itself off the ground in its infancy stage. And so boarding school was the expectation. So a lot of Aramco kids, and this would have been prior to the war in Lebanon, which broke out in 1975, many of the kids would just go to school up in Beirut, the American Community School up there.
Really?
And in fact, my oldest sister, as we were arriving in 1974, she was all set to go to the ACS, as it was called, the American Community School of Beirut. And we even toured that school. We were in Beirut on our arrival here into Saudi, all ready for her to go. And then all of a sudden the civil war broke out there, and that changed things quickly and dramatically for a lot of families. Their kids left that school. And so, and then they looked for other boarding schools throughout the world. So the expectation when you graduated from ninth grade was you would leave and then you would come back three times a year to visit your family. So I headed out to the West Coast where I was from originally and went to a high school out in Oregon, a private high school out there.
And how was that experience coming from Aramco to that private high school?
It was a little bit of culture shock. I mean, I was born and raised in the Pacific Northwest, but after spending, you know, 5 years here in the desert, I was like, ooh, it rains and it's not always sunny. The winters are long and, you know, the sun goes down too soon and all those things. And so I realized early on how much I loved the beach and I liked the sun, but I really enjoyed boarding school. I was fortunate because I'm one of four children. I'm the third of four. So I have two older sisters. And so when I headed off to boarding school, I had always had a sister with me.
Okay, and yeah.
So, you know, family was around. We had family up north in the Seattle area. So there was always that support system in place. You know, and like any kid who's 15, you miss your family, but it was kind of cool to be away from home. And, you know, you met some really interesting people, had great experiences and things like that.
4 years?
So I finished ninth grade here, did 3 years at the high school in Portland, and then headed on to college also in the Northwest as well. But by the time I was finished with college, I was ready to get out of the Northwest, get out of the rain. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love that part of the country. But again, I was so influenced by what was here, the sun, the, you know, consistent weather. So I headed to Texas after that. And that's where Robstown pops in.
Oh, so this is 87.
Yeah. That's why Texas suddenly shows up on the radar. So I headed south towards the sun.
That's what I was looking. I was making all these assumptions as I was gathering my information. I was like, oh, okay. I hadn't heard of Robstown before.
Yeah. It's outside of Corpus Christi. It's a little community, a town. And so I cut my teeth as a teacher teaching in a private school. It was a little Catholic school in Robstown, Texas.
How was that experience?
It was great. It was just a wonderful first year experience working with little second graders. It left a lasting impression on me. And I met amazing people. And that year I met who would become my wife.
Okay.
So a lot of good happened as a result of me moving to Texas.
Yeah, a lasting impression forever.
Yes.
So did you all, because you were there for a year?
I was in Robstown for a year. And because I'd met my soon-to-be wife, I was motivated to move up to San Antonio. And so that's where we ended up getting married, and I continued my teaching career there and was working on my master's. And then along the way, we planned to get married, so we got married, and then soon after, my wife got pregnant, so we had a lot going on. But I always wanted to come back here. I knew from the get-go, from my experience of growing up here, I wanted to come back here and be a teacher here in Aramco. So that was a part of the negotiations with my wife is, so how do you feel about living overseas? You know, it was sort of like my interview question for potential, spouses. So if a girl wasn't interested in anything having to do with overseas, then it was like, okay, that's fine. And then, you know,
shut it down.
It was kind of mutually agreed. It's like, okay, this isn't going anywhere.
You are no longer on the Cornell radar.
Exactly. I was able to convince my now wife, you know, and she's adventurous herself in a lot of just really cool ways. And she knew what this place provided, which was the opportunity then for her to stay home with our children and for me to be a teacher. And that's one of the real gifts of living here, working here, is you can be a single earning family and as a teacher.
right. And you don't have to move into a different position just to provide a different financial outcome for your family.
Exactly. And that was the real blessing for us, because then our daughter was born here and we've just really enjoyed. And that's what's so special about having been here for such a long time, is to see the young families coming in with their children. And then, you know, more kids are born, and it's like, you guys are in the sweet spot. Enjoy it. This is such a great family focused, family oriented community to be in, to raise your family, good schools, you know, activities, you name it.
Where did you get your passion for teaching from? Because you, it seems like you have a passion for education, a passion for students. I heard one time that some people teach content and some people teach kids or teach students. It seems like you have a passion for students and for people and for learning and for what we call the heart of the child. Where did you learn, or where did, were you inspired in that capacity from?
Again, I'll go way back to when I was in first grade, and this would have been back in America. I had a man, first grade teacher. His name was Jack Groom. And back in those days, there weren't that many men who were teachers. He taught me how to read, and I realized that a man can work with young people, children, and be an effective teacher. I would say I give him total credit for convincing me that, yes, a man can be an elementary teacher. And then while I was here as a returning student, they actually used to offer jobs to high school kids here in these communities. Yeah. Many of the self-directed groups would sponsor high school kids, not pay them very much. I only made about 12 reals an hour. But that was money in my pocket. Yeah. So I worked in the Ross Sonora School and Najma School as a returning student. And I got to see and interact with the teachers there, even with some of the kids too. And I thought, hey, this is pretty cool. And so for me, I always had such great teachers. And, you know, as a kid and as a young man, I was inspired a lot by the men who I respected, you know, the leaders, the ones who showed that, yes, good people can be teachers, and men can be teachers as well of young people and make a difference. So I was inspired by them. I had a teacher named Jim Perkerson, a science teacher. He had a heart for teaching, and I was inspired by him as well. You know, ironically, I ended up being Jim Perkerson's son's second grade teacher when I came here.
Really?
As a teacher back in 92. Yeah. So it was like full circle experience, you know, and he told me, you can call me Jim now, you know, because I always call him Mr. Perkerson as I'm sitting across the table talking to him about his son. And that was a real honor to be his son's teacher.
Yeah. Your life, it seems like the path for which you have walked has had all these affirmative, almost like occurrences along it.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing. I'm really grateful for the people that I've crossed paths with. Unexpected meetings with people that all of a sudden, especially when you're young, impressionable, wondering, well, what am I going to do? And that's when you realize as a teacher the importance of your impact on them, you know, on a daily basis. So you have to kind of check in with yourself on a daily basis and say, okay, how am I doing? Can I face this crowd? And if I'm having a hard time, you know, be honest with them. Just say, hey, you guys, you know, I'm feeling a little this or that today. And just be honest with your students so that they don't take it personally, and that your actions, your words, if, you know, you speak out of turn in a way that might cause a child to wonder, is it my fault that the teacher is saying this or that, that you basically say, no, I'm a little cranky or crabby today because I didn't sleep last night or whatever. It's not their fault. And I think it's important to show kids your human side as much as you can, and that's appropriate, just to let them know that you yourself, you have your good days and your bad days, and it's okay for them to have those too within this classroom. It's safe. And that's what I've always tried to, I guess, help the community that you create every year within a classroom, that it's a safe place to be yourself. It's a safe place to improve yourself.
Now, what grade are you teaching this year?
So I'm fifth grade. I'm doing ELA, loving it. Really enjoying it.
What grades have you taught? Have you taught all across the elementary?
I'll tell you, in my, what is this, 30, I forget. I think this is, let's see, 36 years that I've been teaching. Now, I've been mostly a second, third, fourth, and fifth grade teacher. So that's pretty much it. Yeah. Huh.
Do you have a favorite, or is it your favorite, whichever one you're in at the time?
I think it's whatever one you're in at the time. Because right now, I look at these fifth graders, and I'm really going to miss them. Really going to miss them. They crack me up. You know, they do. They just do. And I loved 7 and 8 year olds, second graders, just coming out of learning how to read and just being so excited and just their energy. I could always tell, you know, when I was a younger man, I'm not sure if I can do this when I'll be an older man. And sure enough, you know, as I've gotten older, I've moved up with the age group I'm working with. Yeah.
Understandably so. Understandably so. I'm in grade two right now. And I can see, I enjoy it. Because it's like new fun and energy every day. But you're going to have to keep that energy up for the entire time. Woo, yes. Let's go reading.
Let's do this. Yeah. Yeah. You got to be on your game, top of your game, especially with kids, because they'll see right through it. And that's the thing. You just don't want to be the disappointment for them, because, you know, they're going to be faced with a lot of disappointments in their life and challenges. And you want to be that source of encouragement and strength and predictability for them. You know, you get the privilege of doing this job. And that's the thing. It's a vocation, really, like so many other professions. We don't go into teaching to get rich. You know, you go into it because you feel the call. And at least that's how I've always approached it. And if I stop feeling it, it's time to get out.
A lot of us as teachers, we need to be reminded and continue to grasp onto those core values, which pushed us in this direction in the first place. And I think it's a great reminder to understand with Absolutely. Everything that's going on, that foundational reason that you stepped into the classroom are those smiling faces that you see every single time. I'm taking it all in as I'm talking to you. I'm just taking it. It's so refreshing to hear your perspective, because your perspective has so much seasoning on it.
Oh, thanks, dude.
It's very well thought out, and you can just really tell that this is something that you lived, and not something that you've necessarily read or listened to, but it's a life that you have lived, and it seems like a life well lived.
Well, thank you.
I'll say it on behalf of all of our RamCons who've come after you. Thank you for paving that way, because without that type of dedication and without that type of sacrifice as a teacher, I don't think SAES lasts that long. I think you bring in another company, you do something else. But because of the dedication that you've given has far outlasted the people that have even been here in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And it continues to pave the way for us teachers coming in the 2020s. So again,
thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. So we're here at your first venture. You've just gotten married. You've been in San Antonio, Texas for about 4 years. With the love of your life, you made sure she knew that moving was part of the journey. Your four Yes. years are up. Okay, it's time to go back home. How, why, and just more in-depthly, how was that transition?
Coming here to Saudi was, for me, a dream come true. It's something I'd always wanted. And I felt so fortunate to have a partner with me that was willing to jump in head first or feet first, whatever. I was lucky because my parents were still here at that time. So my kids were able to enjoy having their grandparents for a brief period of time, because my dad retired, my mom as well. about 3 years after we arrived. And so that was nice. Our daughter was just about to turn one when my parents retired. And so that was nice. And then we also had family. My oldest sister and her family, they were also here in the Middle East as well. So it was nice. Cousins and grandparents, at least, you know, on my side of the family, was really special, really special. So we lived life to the fullest here during this first 14-year stretch from 92 to 2006. You know, one of the things that my wife and I had talked about was that big boarding school question that I know a lot of parents ask themselves. And for us, and especially for my wife, boarding school was a tough question. And it was one that she felt it's like it's hard. And I knew that for her, it would be asking too much. And so at that point, then we went ahead and left Saudi Arabia and relocated to Florida for a stretch of time. And we bought a home there, got our kids set up in school, just to give our kids, you know, a chance to spend their high school years growing up in America. And again, this was our family's decision. And that's the thing that I always encourage families to think about: what's best for your family. And, you know, many families, as they're faced with that question, get easily swayed by, you know, what's everybody else doing? And that's fine. But I think you really have to kind of check in with your kids and yourselves and ask yourself, you know, can we do this? So we relocated, and this Aramco brat pulled up his roots and we all did and relocated to Florida. And then we got our kids settled. And then college was looming on the horizon. And we started wondering, how are we going to pay for that?
Right. Right.
Aramco, you know, we made sure when we left too, is to keep in contact with our connections here, which is always good. Any place that you leave, you want to leave with keeping some doors, windows, whatever, bridges open for a pivot. And so in 2010, I returned and on bachelor status here while my wife was helping our daughter finish high school. So now I'm finishing up this last 14-year stretch. And my wife is here with me now. She returned, so it's been great.
So you went home, so that your children could experience those high school years.
Yes,
in the States. I think that's such a bold move because, as you said, it's easy to get caught up in what everyone else is doing. But you know, you make choices with everyone else, but only you have to live with the consequences of those choices.
Exactly.
And so.
Yep. It's important to really know. Yeah. And that's the thing. Those are those conversations that you need to have over years. It's not just a sudden decision. And my wife and I had been talking about it for many years. And so it was a scary decision and it was a leap of faith. But in looking back on it, it was the best decision, especially for this Aramco brat to leave, separate, feel the separation of being gone from here, start a new life, because most of my life had been spent living here. Now, I'm looking forward to going back again now, as you know, once I retire, and knowing, okay, I've done this before, I can do it again.
Are you going to go back to the Bowles school or the Bullet school?
Bowles was the school I was working at. Yeah. No, actually the plan is to actually retire. We'll see.
Really?
Yeah, I know. 60 is young.
Yes.
Except here, you know, you're too old to stick around, that kind of a thing. The good thing about it is at age 60 is you still feel young enough. So you've got some other options ahead of you. And that's where we're just going to kind of wait and see. We're going to take some slower steps along the way. Think about family. I'm blessed. My mom and dad are still around and I want to spend some time with them. Yeah. And, you know, just the extended family as well. Of course, I'm a grandpa, so I want to
really spend some
time. Yep. Yep.
Congratulations. That's so awesome.
Child. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of motivation now that's more family focused.
Right.
And I'm so grateful for that. So work, you know, work is kind of like a secondary choice now. But you know, obviously we'll look at the bottom line and say, well, maybe, you know, but we'll just wait and see. Hopefully the market will make it more favorable to not be driven back into work. We'll see.
Yeah, that's so awesome. It sounds like on the next step of your journey, you're really looking forward to family.
Yes.
When do you leave? Because I heard it's that you have to leave in the month that you turn. So when do you have to leave?
I turn 60 in March. So the end of March, yeah, I have to finish up here. And so we'll depart on April 1st, April Fool's Day. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. So you have 1 month left.
I have 1 month to go. So you caught me. You caught me as I'm on my way out. Yeah. But with such gratitude and such appreciation, this country, this company, this school system, this community, these schools, all these people. I mean, I'm just so grateful to have experienced it through the different generations. And, you know, it's just that enduring element. I see it in the new families that are arriving, that same hope and for the future, and it remains here. You know, we're going through a lot of change, and this country certainly is, which is exciting. And, you know, and it's cool. It's really cool to be in a place that is experiencing change and to be a witness to it, but then to realize, okay, it's time to move on. And I do it with appreciation and gratitude for who I've known, the kids, the families that I've worked with, my colleagues, friends we've made, the lifelong friendships that, you know, with Aramco, it's like you got family, you got your friends, and then you have your Aramco friends right in the middle. They get it, you know, when you get back together and you start talking, yak, 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 and, you know, family starts drifting and those other friends drift, and then those Aramco friends are still interested. Yeah, tell me more, tell me, you know. It's unique, this place. It really is, those connections that you make with people. They're lifelong, and I look forward to getting back together with people who have left and renewing those friendships of folks that are back in the States.
You seem to have maintained such a positive, appreciative outlook on everything. And, you know, like all places, there are ups and downs, lefts and rights. How do you maintain such a positive outlook on your life overseas, the classroom? And then I have to say, as being in AramCon, it's so awesome being here. I'm so grateful. But you know, things can waver. There can be noise. There can be this, there can be that. It is consistently changing. How have you managed to maintain such a grateful heart during all the times of uncertainty?
Yeah. Well, I just feel, you know, as a teacher, and I think one of the things that always has motivated me to remain a teacher is just the hope that comes from kids on a daily basis about everything. I'm attracted to that hope that comes out of kids every day. And I feel like as an adult, we need to keep, you know, try to maintain that spirit of childhood within us. I mean, we were all kids at one point, and just to stay attracted to that energy and to learn from it. Because I've always told my students, I learn more from you guys than I think you learn from. So I've always been drawn to that having a heart of a child. You know, I credit, you know, my faith. That's definitely a foundation for me, a motivator for me. And just the good examples that I've met along the way, the people, you know, the challenges that we all experience in our lives, whether they're health or relational challenges, things like that, they teach us something. And so you just have to ask yourself, it's like, you know, what can I learn from this experience? And that's what you always hope, is to be a better version of yourself. Not every day, but, you know, I've always been motivated by how can I be a better version of myself today, you know, for my students, of course, for my family, for my friends, you know, just to have that attitude, just to try to help others along in their journey, because we're all on journeys,
And maybe along the way, you're going to be a significant helper or a marker for somebody. That's how you want to be remembered, because I know for a fact there have been people in my journey I can pinpoint and say, that person made a difference. Like my first grade teacher, you know, my friendships that I've had here, there have been people that have just lifted me up and have helped me along the way. And so that's what motivates me, are those folks. They are my guides along the way, and then I'm obligated to do the same.
Mr. Cornell, I was looking forward to talking to you, but I'm not sure I expected to be so inspired and so reminded of why, of the reason that I got into teaching, the privilege it is to teach, the privilege it is to teach here, and how I need to be more thankful and more grateful on a daily basis. It has been my honor, my privilege to have this conversation with you. And I hope that I can inspire people the way that I know that you have. My hope for you would be in the next pathway, in the next journey, the next leg of your journey that you take, that tenfold the energy, the dedication, the sacrifice that you have given to all those around to you, around you, would come back.
Thank you.
Tenfold to you, and that you would receive everything that you have given. And I'm just thankful for this. I'm not sure you know how much this
thank has you, settled Darren.
And inspired my soul.
Well, it's been a privilege, and I could listen to you all day. You got that velvet voice, sir. You do.
Oh man. Thank you so much, Mr. Cornell. And so, man, just thank you. And thank you for being a part of Just to Know You.
Oh, thank you, Darian. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Just to Know You.
We would like to thank our amazing tech man, Mr. Kent Arimura, Sterling McDonald for the podcast music, and the SAES community. See you next time.
If you know anyone who you think has a great story to tell, we would love to hear about it. Please send an email to either Angela, Darian, or Kent.